Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, and welcome once again to History Dweebs. My name is Tim. Welcome to the podcast where we take a lighthearted look at the dark side of history. The title of our podcast today is Love Triangle, The Murder of Stanford White. Stanford White was a captain of industry, Brandy. He was a famous architect back in the turn of the 20th century. He became involved in a love triangle and ended up dead on the floor.
Wow.
So we're going to talk about...
That sucks.
Yeah, we're going to talk about his relationship with one Evelyn Nesbit.
Mm.
And
was that the mother of the monkey?
Yes. How'd you guess?
Let me
remind
everyone.
By him.
I know, he's sharp. Let me remind everyone that...
I'm walking down the street. We get the funniest looks from...
I actually have... some monkeys on my iPod.
On your back?
On my iPhone.
Oh.
He got some monkeys on his back, too.
Yeah, I do have that. Those damn monkeys are expensive. Let me remind everyone, we are a true crime comedy history podcast. We use adult language. So if you're easily offended, this probably is not...
Just hit the fucking road and take your Puritan ass out the door.
Probably not the podcast for you, but we
and an ugly woman you brought with you. Take her too.
We would recommend you check out one of the other fine podcasts out there that that are less offensive than us, including our friends with They Walk Among Us, one of the best podcasts out there. So please check them out.
Rosanna has offended me on numerous occasions, Timmy.
Rosanna is a lovely lady, and her husband Ben.
She said some mean things to me, Timmy.
Well, you probably deserved it. You have not been introduced yet. Let me introduce first, though, before I get to you, Colonel. I kind of build up to your introduction. We get the unimportant introductions out of the way.
Yeah,
first.
Let's hurry and get past
yeah,
Brandy.
You're top billing, Colonel.
Yeah.
I like
to warm up. She's like the opening band.
I mean,
did everybody booze and
her engagement
bottles?
In this podcast is going to be minimal because she's got a new phone.
Oh, you got a new phone? Did
I
you?
I did get a new phone.
And now
you
she's
play
playing
your little weed farm on there.
Yeah. And she gets
that's what I'm doing now. I'm farming.
Let me introduce the first lady of podcasting, the lady who is known far and wide as Brandy the Benevolent, Her Majesty Queen Brandy the First. How are you today, Brandy?
I'm good, Timmy. How are you?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked.
Oh, good. Tell me more.
Well, as I mentioned earlier to you, I went to, how was your Thanksgiving, by the way?
It was Thanksgiving. It was fine. I went Black Friday shopping. So.
Oh, did you? Did you buy anything?
Did
you buy a gift yet?
Did I do what?
Did you buy my gift yet?
I have not.
Good.
Probably
I'm glad
you. I'm probably going to do the same thing I did last year.
Okay. So that's nothing. I would. I went house hunting over the weekend.
You did.
I seen. It was a very nice house you looked up.
Yeah, he's cutting into Brandy time with all his bullshit house hunting, but that's okay.
Colonel, I did not buy a house. I didn't find one I wanted. But do you know, Colonel? This might surprise you. It comes as a surprise to Brandy, but I have commitment issues.
I am shocked. Dude.
I know. Aren't you glad you were sitting down for that?
Yeah.
So the search continues. But any other Hold comments before I introduce?
Is there anybody going to give you a 30-year mortgage to me?
Well, I don't know why he would get a 30-year mortgage. You won't even buy stamps.
Yeah, I know.
That's what I'm saying, man. I'm telling you.
Can I get this on a rent-to-own?
Right.
I don't
if I happen to live here for 30 years, I could just keep it.
Can I? Yeah. I don't know what he's doing.
Timmy getting it on the least option.
No. Oh, man, I'm telling you. I'm going to do a reverse mortgage like the second day.
Aw.
Let me introduce the man who is known as the most dangerous man in podcasting today.
He's not.
He has been described as an oasis in the desert of despair.
By no one.
He is known as the moral compass of the History Dweebs podcast.
Negative. And we need one.
Too. My friend, the Honorable Colonel, the Reverend Colonel Charles Beauregard Hawk Waters III, affectionately known as the Southern Gentleman. How are you today, Colonel?
I'm good, Timmy.
How was your Thanksgiving?
You know what the best thing about my Thanksgiving was?
It's over.
4 days without having to look at her.
Well, that's hateful.
But no, you started on me the moment I walked in the door here.
I don't
you're
think
playing
so.
Your, look at you, sending your little hint
I'm engaged.
To drug
I'm
dealers.
Sitting here listening to your and, bullshit. Carry on and on and on and on and on and on.
I made
nice.
It.
Nice shot that you completely missed.
The colonel threw a paper towel over Brandy's head and missed the wastebasket.
Yeah.
3 feet.
Yeah.
That was pretty close.
It
I was in
not.
Vicinity. But anyway, thanks. The boys were home.
Mm-hmm.
And
you have a nice visit.
So were mine, and it sucked.
It was a nice visit. Although, you know, Taylor, he likes to aggravate me, Timmy.
He likes
to remind
do?
Me. He said some smart-ass things to me, and I told him I was going to whip his ass, and then I grabbed him, and his mama jumped in, made me leave him alone. But then he went down in the basement, Timmy,
mm-hmm.
and I followed him. And I opened the door, and there he stood. And I said, you know, your mama ain't here to help you now, boy. What you going to do? He said, I ain't going to do nothing. Your old ass is winded just from walking down the steps.
And it bothered you because he was right, didn't it?
I did. I had to take a couple deep breaths.
What? Never mind your knees giving out.
Yeah,
I mean,
you need to pick your fight. You need to be careful when you pick your fights at your age. Don't want to have a stroke. All right, let's talk about this topic, shall we?
Nobody take care of your drooling ass.
Let me tell you about Evelyn Nesbit.
Oh, Brandy. Please do.
Evelyn Nesbit was a young actress, Brandy.
Yes.
At the turn of the 20th century, who became involved in a bizarre love triangle between two wealthy men that resulted in murder.
Murder,
as they usually do.
Yes. Have you ever been involved in a bizarre love triangle, Brandy?
Why would I tell you motherfuckers about it?
I'm in a normal love triangle. I wouldn't do no bizarre love triangles.
Then you haven't lived. Just saying.
Let me tell you about Evelyn Nesbit. She was born in Territon, Pennsylvania, Brandy. A little village near Pittsburgh.
Oh.
Which I'm sure was lovely in 1884 when she was born. Steel and smog and yeah.
Good times.
Even as a baby, she was surprisingly pretty. Because, you know, newborns are not that cute.
They all look like Winston Churchill.
Yeah. And her face, she was called a dark-haired angel, Brandy.
Yeah.
She attracted hundreds of visitors to her parents' humble home, a two-story frame cottage.
That's fucking weird. That's fucking weird.
They come from miles around to see her.
That's so weird.
Well, you don't know.
First of all, they better be bringing presents.
They didn't have Netflix.
Was she a hooker?
They better be bringing presents.
She's a baby.
No, she's a baby.
Oh, hold on. People travel for miles around to see a baby?
Yes.
This is what I'm saying. They don't even do tricks or anything.
Her family lived in a modest two-story frame cottage worth less than $2,000.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I need right there. Well, what's a mortgage? What's a fixed rate on $2,000 over 30 years?
That'd be about $12 a month, Timmy.
I can afford that. Florence Evelyn was her name. She was a interesting child, Brandy.
I doubt it.
Very quiet, somewhat shy. She did not easily make friends with anyone, but when someone did gain her confidence, she was a loyal friend.
Is she one of those people like, I can't have any friends because I'm just too beautiful?
She became the first
hit
girl, but I'm getting ahead of myself.
Oh, okay.
She's a very beautiful child, and she had a remarkable sweet voice for one so young.
I was told that when I was a child.
You were not ever told that.
Her
talent. I was on Uncle Al's show.
Were you really?
Yes, I was.
Dude, I remember Uncle Al. He was here in Cincinnati. Uncle Al was a, he hosted a TV show for children, right? So did you do the...
Uncle Al was a bit of a drinker.
Well, you know, we had one and...
Wendy was mean.
She was... Oh.
No, she didn't like you.
She grabbed Remember she did that collar?
Run, chicken fat run?
Mm-hmm.
We had... But we had... In our area where I grew up, we had Mr. Cartoon. And he wore... This is... Oh, man. He wore this checkered jacket. Real loud jacket. He wore dark sunglasses and a checkered hat.
And sounds he was a, like a
and he gets
sounds like a prevert.
And he has kid in his audience, right? And they come and they show cartoons, and he'd interview these kids in between cartoons. And I mean, he was a real prick to them. they start talking, he pulled a microphone away. It's kind of like what we need to do with Colonel over here sometimes,
for sure.
Cut him off. Oh yeah. Anyway, back to Evelyn. We get sidetracked, and people don't like that about our podcast.
Well, you know what, people, if you it's don't, I'm sorry for down. The interruption. I'm sorry. I'm just saying I'm sorry for the interruption.
Thank you, Colonel.
And if we've caused you to distract you from your miserable fucking existence for 30 seconds.
Well, no, it's just that this story is very, you know, it's very interesting, and people are on the edge of their seat, and then when we sidetrack.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. It breaks the flow.
Yeah, this is a fascinating story. Brandy always loves my stories.
Mm-hmm.
So
she don't even listen.
Evelyn totally had a remarkably sweet voice for someone her age. Her talent along this line was marked when she was about 5 years of age. She made her first public appearance, Brandy.
Jesus.
The occasion was a memorial service, which was held at the Methodist Church, of which her father and mother were members. The service was held to honor in honor of the members who died during the year, and she sang beautifully. So it was a big coming out. When she's 5 years old, she's singing in front of people.
Of course she is.
In the midst of the solemn hush,
coming up.
In the midst of the solemn hush of the series, came the sweet voice of a child singing. It was Evelyn, hidden behind the evergreens, and in a voice which will never be forgotten and which could distinctly be heard over in the large auditorium. Before her song was halfway finished, nearly the entire audience was moved to tears, Brandy.
Yes.
Softly, sweetly, but still distinctly came the words of the song. It was a splendid triumph for the little child, and the memory of it lingers in the hearts of the people who were there that day.
These people need lives.
You don't like the sweet voice of a young child singing? Well, you don't like church, so I mean, you would hate a church.
What?
That's all right. Go ahead.
All right. So Evelyn and her family moved to Pittsburgh. Remember I said they lived near Pittsburgh. So they moved to Pittsburgh, and while still a schoolgirl, Evelyn's father died.
Oh.
Yeah. He was a struggling attorney, and he left the family almost destitute. That means they don't have any money. Outstanding debts.
Thanks for mansplaining the shit right out of that.
Outstanding debts on the little property left by their father shut off almost every source of income. So, you know, they're in a spot. They're in a jam, Brandy. In 1897, when Evelyn was only 13 years old, a woman named Mrs. Adara, she was a portrait painter and a miniature artist in Philadelphia. I don't know what a miniature artist is.
They paint things on like a grain of rice.
Oh. Mm. I thought maybe she was just really, really small.
No, she was a midget. Midget painter.
Can't use that term. You'd be apologizing.
Oh, I'm sorry for the midgets. She was a little person.
Thank you, Colonel. Anyway.
That made it better.
She discovered Evelyn's beauty and painted her in a portrait. Later, she asked Evelyn to sit on several more, model several. This is for, you know, photography was as big as it was. So she was doing a lot of paintings and using her as a model. The pictures were printed in an art magazine.
So weird.
And attracted attention. Soon, Evelyn found that she was being sought by the most successful artists and photographers in the country. Brandy, what do you think about that?
So weird. So
she's a young beauty, right?
Uh-huh.
Demand for the privilege of photographing her beautiful face, Colonel, or portraying her on campus became so great that the money earned by the little girl was helping the family out, right?
Well, yeah.
Her mother decides to capitalize on this even more, she wanted to move to New York, where, you know,
she was a momager.
She was a first stage mom. Yeah, she's one of the first stage moms.
She's Kris Kardashian.
So she took they took a boarding house, a low rent boarding house in New York, and they started seeking out these studios of famous artists so that Evelyn could start her modeling career. It was when her mother, modest yet proud of her beautiful young daughter, her daughter was budding into girlhood, womanhood, Brandy.
Perfect.
She took her to a photographer, and he took pictures of her, and she started appearing in magazines in New York. So she's making money, right? She's yes. Getting work. Everyone, they put one of her photographs was put on a display in the window of one of the photographers, so he's displaying his work. And people would come in off the street to ask who was that beautiful young girl in the picture. One day, when the model was about to leave the studio that she was working with a photographer at the time named Charles Gibson, who I guess was kind of a pretty big deal. I didn't do a lot of research on him, but he was a prominent photographer back in the day. She was leaving his studio when a man entered.
Uh-oh.
The man, he was struck by the flower-like beauty of the young girl. Ugh. He was a New York socialite and architect named Stanford White. Brandy, remember that name, Stanford White.
It's etched in the brain.
He just sounds like a dick. I bet he wore ass.
He's 47 years old. Married with children. At the time, he was nearly three times the age of Evelyn.
You know, I'm looking at Evelyn here.
Yeah.
And she's just not that special. Well, like, there must have been some ugly motherfuckers running around there.
She was the first It Girl. You've heard of the It Girl? She was like the first It Girl.
No, I get all that. Like, I caught it when you said it before. Mm-hmm. Thank you, but...
Oh, we didn't know if he was even listening. So
yeah, I've been commenting. Shut the hell up. But I'm looking at her picture, and she's just not anything spectacular.
Well, like, she made the question mark. I think this is a question mark hairstyle famous. It's a portrait of her on the
down the
portrait,
side of her.
Yeah, and a little curl at the end makes it look like a question mark. Well, she made that famous, that hairstyle famous.
Well, she's just not that.
I thought she was attractive.
She's nothing special. She's nobody I'd travel across the country to see as a baby or an adult for that matter. She's just not.
You seem a little judgy today.
She's jealous. Sanford White was very
jealous.
you seem petty and jealous.
Yeah.
You did. Little claws coming out. She ain't all that.
Yeah.
And a bag of chips.
She's very.
Well, he's going on like she's fucking Aphrodite Jones there.
Nesbitt. Look her up.
Aphrodite Jones. I met her, actually.
I know you have. I'm sure you dated her or banged her or something.
So anyway, Stanford White, who was 47 at the time, almost three times her age, he became quite taken with young Evelyn.
I'm sure he did. Young girl, all her teeth.
He was taken by her charm and began pursuing her, despite the fact that he was nearly three times her age.
Gross.
And the fact that he was married with children.
Oh, well, why let that stand in the way?
But he was a famous architect. He built a lot of
stuff. She was hot.
No.
I think so, too.
I'd do her.
Of course you would. That's never a question.
Stanford White.
Look at that face.
Yeah, she's adorable.
She's the face of an angel.
He did this. You know, he said the same thing about Bertha and Oofty Goofty.
You know what?
Your standards are sad.
Look, would you look at the face on this girl?
I saw her. She's nothing spectacular.
She has the face of an angel.
I'd bang her like a snare drum, girl.
Of course you would.
So would Stanford White. He was really taken with her. Stanford White was a well-known architect in New York. He had built Madison Square Gardens, among other things. He was very wealthy.
Now, hold on. He built it?
Well, he designed it. He designed
now, hold on. He's an architect.
He's an architect. He designed it.
He designed it.
Yeah.
Okay. So he didn't actually go down and lay the bricks down.
Like,
and,
no.
Like, there was a lot wrong with that sentence.
They would hire someone like you to do that.
Nah.
No, probably
no, they
not.
Wouldn't. They need smarter people.
Anyway. Evelyn was quite taken with Stanford.
Stanford's money.
Well, no, she was. She liked the attention of an older man. You remember, she's got daddy issues. Her dad.
Thank God for daddy issues. Ain't that right, Timmy?
It's how Timmy lives his life.
Although I'm in that stage where I need granddad issues. Nothing wrong with meeting, you know, people meeting their emotional needs.
That's however, right.
Right?
Ain't none getting hotter, grow hotter than a man in a walker, Timmy.
Especially if he's got a savings account.
Money falling out of his pocket.
Tennis balls on the walker.
Carrying around $500 in cash. Yeah. Evelyn.
And the card of one cabbie.
Evelyn became the toast of the town when she met Stanford because he was very active in society, you know, the social circles in New York.
Did his wife appreciate that?
And I don't think his wife knew. He had a home in Connecticut, but he kept an apartment in New York in Manhattan.
Ah.
And he would take his lady friends to the apartments.
Oh.
But he would take friends, lady friends like Evelyn. He was really into chorus girls, and he would take them out, and then he would take them to his apartment, and he would take them out to like DeMonico.
It's like he's living your life, Timmy.
Yeah,
but this guy was loaded. He was better off.
I don't walk around with $500 in my pocket. Do you, Chuck?
I got 42 right now.
Get the hell out of here.
I am not bullshitting here.
Wow. How'd you manage that?
Count it while we...
Nobody listens to this podcast.
Hey, I had to give $2 to the tooth...
Here,
the tooth
mine.
Fairy.
I don't have 500, though.
Oh.
Today, it's a little light. So, Evelyn... So, now Evelyn is going out with Stanford.
$51 on
me
right now.
Evelyn's going out with Stanford. He's showing her... He's introducing her to his friends... He's becoming quite taken with Evelyn, okay? Now, Evelyn...
This feels like sweaty boob money.
Evelyn, his mother was okay with this relationship.
Well, sure she was.
because he was providing for them financially. He actually put Evelyn up in an apartment, put Evelyn and her mother up in an apartment, and started paying their bills. So... he got her mother's approval. What do you think of that, Brandy?
Uh-huh.
I think that was a shady mother.
Right.
Upon Evelyn's persistence, Sanford White helped the young beauty start a stage career. How about that, Colonel?
Well, I think that was kind of him. But I believe he had ulterior motives.
Well, Evelyn found herself...
Nefarious motives.
Evelyn found herself falling in love with Stanford White.
$245.
Thank you. Thank you, Brandy.
So he's only 195 ahead of me.
Well, you never know when you need money.
I straightened out your cash in your fucking...
Thank you.
Velcro wallet.
It's not Velcro. It's leather. Did you put it in...
It's in alphabetical order.
Well, I wanted it in...
Did you put it all back?
No, wait. Well, that's the bigger question. Yeah. Here's the other thing. I unwadded the bills, so I don't think you're going to piss and moan at me about what order they're in.
Well, I like them in order of
do you?
The
because
serial number. That would
they
be.
Were wadded in there.
That would be preferable. What you
looks
think
like Noah's wallet.
It's Noah have $241?
In Monopoly cash, and he keeps it just the same way that you did. Just all wadded and shoved in there.
So Evelyn, talks. She knows that she can never marry a Stanford White because he has a wife and two kids. But she talks him into helping her start a stage career. Now he had a lot of influence in the theater. He ran in the theater circuits.
In the theater.
And so he was able to help her get a job or help her get a career in acting, Brandy, on Broadway.
They say the neon light's so bright.
No, I mixed up George Benson and the Bee Gees.
You know, on one thin dime won't even shine your shoes.
No, that's what I hear.
But if you only got one thin dime, why you want your shoe shine?
You got other, other priorities.
You got bigger problems. You're lucky you got shoes.
And you really shouldn't be in New York because it's an expensive city if you only got one thin dime. Although, really... Aren't all dimes the same? Are they thick dimes?
No.
Okay, Brandy, tell us what's happens next with young Evelyn and Stanford White. Okay, so we've just had to take a quick break here because the colonel just jumped up and went out of the room for no apparent reason.
I had to get some fingernail clippers, Tony.
Couldn't that have waited till the end of the podcast?
No, I got a little... I'm working on a mechanical thing, and I don't have wire cutters, but fingernail clippers would do it.
Brandy, tell us what happens next with Stanford White and the beautiful Evelyn Nesbitt.
Try to stay on topic, please.
Stanford managed her career down to the smallest detail. And with White's connections, Evelyn Nesbitt's fame shot as she flaunted her exquisite... her exquisite form and graceful beauty.
That sounds like a lot of the women on the TV page.
Why do you, as a woman...
Yeah, why are you bashing other women? Yes. Aren't you women supposed to stick
together? No, I'm not. I'm actually bashing Tim's writing.
She had a lovely figure and a beautiful face.
I have a way with words. Don't you think so?
You have... Timmy, you are a word magician.
Thank you, Colonel.
Anyway. She flaunted all that in two successful plays. Floridora.
That was a big hit, by the way, Floridora.
And The Wild Rose.
It was like the Hamilton of his time.
Yeah, it really was.
It was her role in The Wild...
You couldn't get tickets for the thing.
Mm-mm. Oh, no.
It was her role in The Wild Rose in 1902 that brought her to the attention of many powerful men. Mm. Her admirers included the brother of stage actress Ethel Barrymore. John Barrymore.
Okay.
Is that Drew's grandpa?
Drew's grandfather. That's correct.
Was a witty, fun-loving companion, and Evelyn became
Much
smitten
like Timmy.
With him.
Yeah, I'm a witty, fun-loving
Timmy's
companion.
Timmy's a witty, fun-loving companion.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Just throwing that out there.
That's what he's known for. Mm-hmm. At 21, John Barrymore was much closer to Evelyn's age than Stanford.
I'm a little bit closer to Stanford's age.
Yeah. After an evening out,
you're
the couple
a bit closer
often,
to Moses' age.
The couple often returned to Barrymore's apartment, remained there together well into the early morning hours.
Wonder what they were
Scandalous.
Doing, What were they doing, Colonel?
They was fornicating.
Scandalous.
They was sinning.
Avoiding.
They was sinning. Ooh, we doing some sinning.
Probably a couple really, times. Really, a woman, a lady, should not be in the company of a man in his apartment unless they're married. Is that true, Colonel, alone?
No, that's how people open up their robes and start Louis C.K. and you. You don't want to be in that
that's
situation.
That's how pregnancy occurs.
Mm-hmm.
Avoiding the family path of entering the acting world, John Barrymore was casually pursuing a career as an illustrator and cartoonist.
Yeah, he wasn't as loaded as some of his relatives were.
Although he showed some promise in this chosen field, his salary was small, and Evelyn's mother, who evidently is now bougie, considered him an unsuitable companion for her 17-year-old daughter.
Hey, look, when you
But
got
Stanford is all good.
Well, Stanford's loaded.
Yeah, and married, and, you know, whatever.
Stanford was making it rain over there.
Yeah.
Both Mrs. Nesbitt and White were greatly displeased when they found out about their relationship.
I bet he was.
Stanford White engineered a plan to separate the couple by arranging for Evelyn's enrollment in a boarding school in New Jersey and administered by Matilda DeMille,
Matilda the Hun. Is what they used to call her.
I bet. The mother of the noted film director, Cecil B. DeMille.
Oh.
In the presence of both Mrs. Nesbitt and White, John Barrymore had asked Evelyn to become his wife, but she turned down his marriage proposal.
That's slut.
Well, he didn't have any money.
Aside from her relationship.
Gold digging little hoe bag.
Well, here we go.
He was a cartoonist.
Aside from her relationship with John Barrymore, Evelyn Nesbitt was involved with other powerful men who vied for her attention.
Well, she's an attractive young lady.
Mm-hmm.
Among those were the polo player James Montgomery Waterbury, known as Monty. And the young magazine publisher Robert J. Collier.
I want to be Thad.
My nephew's Thad. I want to be Biff.
Good.
Yeah, Biff would be good.
That's kind of a bully name.
Wait a minute. Biff from Back to the Future.
Biff spelled backwards is Fib.
It is. It's Fib, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good job.
Thank you.
Words.
You know, and we got on this. Well, never mind. I'm going to let that one go. But.
Yeah, now you can't introduce something and then let it go.
I'm just saying, people, we have all these pronouns for people who identify as whatnot. And, mm-hmm. And people can say, you know, they or this or whatever, you know, they identify as whatever. But why can't I complain when people don't call me hawk?
You can.
Because I identify as a bird of prey.
You identify as a jackass. Throughout these relationships, Stanford White still maintained a potent presence in her life, maintaining his position as benefactor.
Betty so was wait, potent.
Well, I don't understand. His wife knows, but she still lets him hang around.
Look, the guy's got bank.
Yeah, he was throwing dollars at the wife. She don't care. She was buying jewelry.
It was at this time that Harry Thaw made her acquaintance.
Oh, Harry.
Harry was the son of a Pittsburgh coal and railroad baron.
Robber baron.
You know, the Pittsburgh Thaws.
Yeah.
Well, you know, remember, Evelyn is originally from Pittsburgh, so they had that in common.
They were both Steelers fans.
Mm-hmm. Here we go. With a history of pronounced mental instability since childhood.
Does that remind you of Timmy?
Thaw, heir to a $40 million fortune, led a reckless, self-indulgent life. He was born on February 12, 1871, to Pittsburgh coal and railroad baron William Thaw. Henry was 13 years older than Evelyn and already lived quite the life. There was a history of mental illness on his mother's side of the family, and Harry's mother herself was known for her abuse of the servants and episodes of ungovernable temper.
Quick question, Devil.
Yes.
What side of the family does your mental illness come from? Is it your mama or your papa? Or
in
you
18,
got it from both sides?
Do you think Brandy is mean to her servants?
Oh, you know she is.
Interesting.
Ringing that bell. Noah, get your ass in here with my tea.
Bless his heart. He can't carry a cup of juice across the floor without spilling it. I wouldn't trust him with tea. In 1874, Josiah, a brother born a year before Harry, died an accidental death in infancy, smothered by his mother's breast while he lay in her bed.
There's worse ways
That's
to go,
not
you
funny.
Know.
I bet she fell asleep. She was breastfeeding him and
That's
fell asleep.
That's funny. Well, you guys are laughing.
The boob smotherer.
What a way to go.
You know, if I'm going to go, I want a big double D just over my nose and mouth.
So you want to die from breast
inhalation.
Yeah.
In childhood, Thaw was subject to bouts of insomnia, temper tantrums, incoherent babbling, and notably baby talk, a form of expression which he retained into adulthood.
Yeah, that's not as attractive as an adult. Yeah.
Oh, look at you, little girl. Come here. Oh, how pretty you are.
That sounds creepy.
that's how he would talk to the girl, though.
His chosen form of amusement was appropriating heavy household objects as weaponry to hurl at the heads of servants.
Well, that's, you know, you got that
a minute.
Was before Netflix.
Wait a minute. Let's see who this sounds like. Hold on. The misfortune of others brought on fits of giggling.
Yeah, Colonel, that's not a good sign.
No, but you know, sometimes the misfortunes of others is just funny.
Especially if they're assholes.
Well, I mean, poor motherfucker, the butler walking across the room.
And he throws a stove at him.
Get a toaster upside dead, like son of a bitch.
Harry's home. Damn it. Yeah. He spent his childhood bouncing from private school to private school in Pittsburgh, never doing well, and was described by teachers as unintelligent and a troublemaker. I think that's probably about accurate. A teacher at Wooster Prep School described the 16-year-old Harry as having an erratic kind of zigzag walk, which seemed to involuntarily mimic his brain patterns.
I want to see this guy walk.
His parents spent most of their time and money.
No, actually, that's very smart because then that's like with the Army.
Serpentine.
Well, Lee Harvey Oswald would have never
shot that
got
way.
Him.
Yeah.
If Kennedy would have been driving in a zigzag,
yeah.
History would have changed him.
Yeah. His parents spent most of their time and money getting Henry out of
trouble.
Would
end up
I
on
feel
curve.
Their fucking pain.
Continue, Brandy.
His father was able to use his influence to get his son into Harvard. But he seldom spent time in the classroom. So they get this dipshit into Harvard.
They had this guy, and he
the guy who can't spell Harvard.
And I think I told
and
you
throws irons.
I think I told you this off the air, but his allowance in 1902.
Oh, that's right, $80,000 a month.
$80,000 a month.
Now, does it say anything about him banging his economics professor in there to get?
Oh,
his
I forgot how funny that was since you hadn't mentioned it yet. Thaw reportedly lit his cigars with $100 bills. He is making it rain.
He's a baller.
He's
man.
A holler.
You know, well, and just to clarify, while we was off the air, I found $40 more in my pants.
Speaking of baller, there you go.
Yeah, I got $95 up in this place.
All right, so he lit cigars with $100 bills. He also went on long drinking binges,
okay.
Attended cockfights,
okay,
and spent.
You know, those are no funny. That I came away from cockfights quite bruised off it.
You sound judgmental when you're reading this.
You do.
I am. And spent much of his time romancing young women.
All right.
In 1894, he chased a cab driver down a Cambridge street with a shotgun, believing he'd been cheated out of 10 cents change.
This is guy's getting $80,000 a month from his parents' house.
Hold on. But he's got a shotgun. Why'd he chase him? Why didn't he just fire the damn
shotgun?
Because
he's stupid. Yeah. He claimed the shotgun was unloaded, so he's trying to hit him with it. Thaw was ultimately expelled from Harvard for immoral practices, as well as intimidating and threatening fellow students and teachers.
Okay.
After being expelled from Harvard, Thaw lived the life of a young playboy. Harry repeatedly tore through Europe at a frantic pace, frequenting...
$91 is what I got right now.
Okay. Frequenting nice. Bordellos where his pleasure involved restraining his partners with handcuffs and other devices of bondage.
Okay, let's talk about that, Brandy. What's your feeling
Why would on, we do that?
Why is your feeling on bondage?
I have a safe word.
That's a good point.
That is my feeling.
What's your safe word with the Mrs. Colonel?
Huh?
What's your safe word?
You can't say no safe word around there.
You don't have a
there
safe word?
No safe words, no.
What is it,
but
like
you know
Voldemort?
What? Those days are over because I got $91. That's fuck you money, Timmy.
That's what that is.
Yeah.
Fuck you money. I'm going to walk in and fuck you. I got $91, motherfucker.
And then 10 minutes later, you come back. Yeah. 10 minutes after being in Best Buy, you come back.
Hey, he'll be in here in a few minutes asking for change for the vending machine.
Exactly.
Only have a five.
Yeah. In Paris in 1895, Thaw threw an extravagant party.
And a stove.
Reportedly costing $50,000, nice. Which drew wide publicity.
I mean, 50 grand back in the turn of the 20th century, that's a lot of dough.
Well, sure, it's a lot of dough now. The attendees were Harry and 25 of the most beautiful showgirls, bordello prostitutes he could assemble.
How about that, Colonel?
A military band was hired to provide the musical entertainment.
Yeah, this is funny.
If you're gonna pay $50,000,
you hire John Philip Sousa.
Yeah. Yeah.
For Thaw, John Williams Sousa's marches were the favorite party music as they lifted the roof off the place.
He probably did the Charleston.
He was raising
the
roof. Now, if he was having a
the Charleston, that was in the '20s.
It was the '20s.
The most awesome birthday party ever, and have Van Halen. Would you have Sammy Lee Hagar Van Halen?
Sammy.
Oh, that's bullshit, Van Halen, right there.
Okay, then.
Now, David Lee Roth's an asshole.
But there was much of.
He's driving for UPS now or something.
No, you know they're going to get back together with both of them now.
They keep saying that. It's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, they tried before and they just argue and fight.
All right, so they lifted the roof off the place. Each of the Parisian beauties found a unique party favor at the end of the meal. The dessert course was a $1,000 piece of jewelry wrapped around the stem of a liquor glass.
Would you let go of that party, Brandy?
I would go to that party. Mm-hmm. Once in London, Thaw purportedly devised a lure for an unsuspecting bellboy, whom Thaw proceeded to restrain naked in a bathtub and brutalized him with beatings from a riding whip.
Any thoughts on that, Colonel?
Did he tip him?
The Thaw family had to pay out $5,000 to keep the incident quiet.
There you go. That was a lot of cash in those days. Mm-hmm. I'd take a beating right now for $5,000. $5,000.
You let someone tie you up naked in the bathtub and beat you with a belt.
Cut out my goddamn kidney and put leave ice in
I'm
there.
I'm pretty sure there's folks on our Facebook page that would take you up on it.
There's a GoFundMe right now. GoFundMe to whip the colonel's ass.
In addition to womanizing and his strange sexual preferences, Harry Thaw was a drug addict, reportedly addicted to both cocaine and heroin.
Speedball.
Well, and this was before Narcan. Mm-hmm. Harry ran in the same social circles as Stanford White. Well, clearly they're almost the same. Although White was unaware that Thaw secretly loathed him. There does not seem to be a rational reason for this hatred. I don't think he needs one.
So the important point here is that he already disliked Stanford White before he even met Evelyn.
Right.
Okay.
So, thank you. Just gave it away, but that's all right. Uh-huh. Harry was obsessed with Stanford.
You read it. I don't believe that you actually conveyed the message that Timmy was trying to get through his script.
Thank God you're here to mansplain.
What is it with you and mansplain? You know why mansplaining is a thing? Because fucking women don't understand anything. We're getting a new front door.
Okay, did I forget to tell you how much I don't give a fuck about your new front door?
No, but
don't
care. No, let me
tell you. Nobody cares.
Okay.
I can't stress enough how much nobody cares.
Huh? Yeah, I'm going to have to go through the back door from now on. So, no. So, the guy's telling us how we got to get a custom door, and Renee doesn't understand that we got a brick fucking house. The fucking house is brick. The house does not adjust for doors. And when I try to explain that, that's mansplaining. You know why it's mansplaining? Because women don't know shit like that. So man has to explain to people who don't even need. It's like pick out the fucking door you want and they will cut it down to the size you need. Why they got to cut it? What? Well, because it's easier in cutting a door than it is cutting 2 inches of brick, motherfucker. That's why.
Your comments, Brandy.
You're an asshat.
No, that's mansplaining. No. If women ask questions about what they didn't know shit about,
I understand what mansplaining is. You don't have to mansplaining.
I don't believe you do.
Like, I got it.
I don't believe
I got
you
it.
Do.
But let's establish several things here. I'm much smarter than you. And
I'm not sure about that.
Much
now.
Better looking.
And his wife makes more money.
And your wife, you're kind of kept.
It doesn't, all I'm
but
saying
the important
is,
thing is, did you get to use the back door?
He doesn't like it. Too small.
When a guy's explaining why you got to get a custom door, you don't need to ask 10,000 questions when I already get it, and now I got to pass
along
the information.
Oh, so you're talking about a real door. I thought you were.
Yeah, no, this is a real door.
I thought it was a euphemism.
Okay, so Harry's obsessed with Stanford, and he hires detectives.
But thanks for woman-splaining that to
me.
He
hires detectives to follow White. Like Stanford, Harry Thaw was attracted to chorus girls, especially girls that Stanford had dated.
He kicked their legs
Why did
up?
He want Stanford sloppy seconds? Good God.
Oh, God.
He was obsessed with
Do you have to be
reason.
So rude
I see
and
that.
Vulgar?
Harry Thaw would often, yes, Harry Thaw would often attend the theater in search of his prey. This is how Harry came to meet Evelyn Nesbitt. Thaw knew that Stanford White had dated Evelyn, and he was determined to pursue her himself. Harry had been in the audience of The Wild Rose, attending some 40 performances for the better part of a year. Good Lord. Through an intermediary, Thaw ultimately arranged a meeting with Evelyn, introducing himself as Mr. Monroe. Thaw maintained this subterfuge with the help of Confederates, while showering her with gifts and money before he felt the time was right to reveal his true identity.
What year was this, Timmy?
1900. I think it was like 1906.
There were still Confederates?
Good job.
I thought they broke them up.
Good job.
Good thing you ran.
The day soon came.
Did you like my turn of phrase?
It was beautiful. There.
Thank you.
The day soon came when he confronted Evelyn. Seems harsh. She didn't do anything. And announced, I am not Monroe. I am Henry Kendall Thaw of Pittsburgh.
Of the Pittsburgh Thaws.
Of the Pittsburgh Thaws. Evelyn enjoyed her time with Thaw, and her mother was pleased that Thaw was a man of means, even though he's batshit crazy.
Well, yeah, but he's a man of means. He's from Pittsburgh. He's a little younger than Henry or Stanford White. Right?
Well, Stanford was not pleased with the relationship and encouraged Evelyn to stop seeing Thaw.
I wonder if she called Stanford Daddy.
Oh, I bet she did. And threatened to cut off his financial support. But Evelyn continued to date Thaw and was out on the town with him on almost every night. Mm. The late hours and endless, restless partying had told upon the fragile girl, and she fell ill.
Oh.
In 1903, Evelyn underwent emergency surgery. The nature of that surgery has remained a subject of controversy. The official diagnosis was an appendectomy. However, some sources speculate that she was pregnant by John Barrymore and had an abortion.
Oh, no.
Now, John Barrymore's back in the mix.
Well, they were all kind of, she was seeing all of them at the same time.
Yeah. Hmm. Henry invited Evelyn to join him on a European tour to help her recuperate.
That's nice.
Evelyn insisted that her mother join them, and Thaw agreed. However, the trip proved to be anything but recuperative. Thaw's usual hectic mode of travel escalated into a nonstop itinerary, calculated to weaken Nesbitt's emotional resilience, compound her physical frailty, and unnerve and exhaust Mrs. Nesbitt. As tensions mounted, mother and daughter began to bicker and quarrel, leading to Miss Nesbitt's insistence on returning to the United States. Having effectively alienated her from her mother, Thaw then took Nesbitt to Paris, leaving Miss Nesbitt in London. It was in Paris that Thaw proposed to Evelyn, but she refused.
No.
Aware of Thaw's strange obsession with female chastity, she
could... Well, now, wait a minute, Colonel. Female chastity is very important if you're a suitor.
It's quite important. Do you even know what chastity is, Devil?
She could not in good conscience accept his marriage proposal without revealing to him the truth of her relationship with Stanford wife White.
Okay.
So fuck yourself.
So just to recap.
Oh, my God. Recap fucking what? I just got done fucking saying.
Why are you so hostile?
Why are we recapping?
Did you not have a good Thanksgiving?
She could... just to recap, Harry Thaw, this young man who has some mental illness, wealthy young man, proposes to her.
I just said all this like
where you stumbled to her like you had a mouthful of marbles.
She was,
just
no, I did not.
And your monotone voice.
She could not accept his proposal because
he wanted a virgin.
She knew that he was obsessed with chastity, and she knew that she was not a virgin. Go ahead,
she was.
Yeah. Now, let me.
She was a little loose in the
caboose. Let me try to bring your words.
Yes. Yes, Colonel. Try to bring him to life. Please.
Yeah, I mean.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
She read that monotone script.
Bring something to life. Jesus Christ.
So, Timmy, what transpired next was a marathon question of inquisition, Timmy.
Oh, really? There you go. Yeah. Question and inquisition.
Much like when it takes me 10 extra minutes at Kroger. Mm-hmm. During which Thaw managed to extract every detail of that night and how. When plied with champagne, Nesbitt lay intoxicated, unconscious, and White had his way with her.
Brandy, basically what we're saying here is that they had sex.
Yeah. Non-consensual sex.
Now, in his apartment, this is not in the script, but I'll just tell you something. Stanford White had a red velvet swing, and he would have his chorus girls swing naked on that. What do you think about that, Colonel?
I think that's a good investment. You got to hang it from a beam, though, because you don't want to just put that into the plaster.
No, because well, it'll fall. I'm sure he was an architect.
Ain't nothing more awkward than having
Stanford did.
Yeah, having the
Stanford
swing.
Had the swing.
Yeah,
there was nice. All freaks back then.
I mean, that's a nice idea, you know, if you could have some attractive woman swing naked in your living room. That's not a bad mm-hmm. deal. That's not a bad deal.
Yeah, unless she kick you in the head when you're walking by. But anyway, so Nesbitt laying here intoxicated, and I'm pretty sure we can all agree on this rule. If the woman is unconscious, that's a no.
Yes, she doesn't have capacity to say
that.
That's
a no. Right. And White had his way with her. Now, throughout this grueling question and answer ordeal, Evelyn was tearful and hysterical. Thaw by turns was agitated and gratified by her responses.
What do you think about that, Brandy?
He's a dick.
He further drove the wedge between mother and daughter, condemning Miss Nesbitt as an unfit parent.
Well, now, nice. Now, well, come on, Brandy. He's got a point there. She's having him bang old rich men.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she's no, she's her. Unfit, but I don't think he has the capacity to.
You don't have the room to talk?
Yeah.
All right.
Nesbitt blamed the outcome of events on Nesbitt's willful defiance of her mother's cautionary advice and defended her mother as naive and unwitting.
Mm. Naive and unwitting.
Yes. Thaw also spouted his hatred of Stanford White for deflowering the innocent Evelyn.
Yes, you see, Brandy, what do you think about that? He deflowered her.
Yeah, it happens.
It does sometimes.
Yeah, it does.
I don't know what you want me to say to that, but it happens.
He seemed obsessed with the fact that Evelyn was not a virgin, would become extremely angry and even violent when stewing on it.
Mm.
Thaw and Nesbitt traveled through Europe, and Thaw, as guide, chose a bizarre agenda, a tour of sites devoted to the cult of virgin martyrdom.
You think that, Brandy? The cult of virgin martyrdom.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything about that group.
They would not accept you.
Yeah.
And Domremy, France, the birthplace of Joan of Arc, Thaw left a telling inscription in the visitor's book.
This is good.
Uh-oh.
She would not have been a virgin if Stanford White had been around.
I think he's like, he's got a chip on his shoulder.
He might be bitter.
He's got a hard on for Stanford White.
Bobby Bitterpants right there.
Now, Thaw pursued Nesbitt
table for
obsessively
one.
For years, 2 years now, continuously pressing her for marriage.
All right.
Craving financial stability in her life.
Don't we all crave that, really, Brandy?
And in doing so,
I don't know what
you people crave.
You know,
she was doing it for financial stability. The devil did it for a C in economics.
And
whatever.
She did it for her new phone.
Mm-hmm. And
I wonder how she got Dave to buy her new phone.
Yeah, what dirty deeds did you have to pull off for that new phone, devil?
Probably in a swing in the living room.
Yeah, with a blindfold on.
Don't you not worry about what I'm doing and focus on what you're doing.
She got her phone, so whatever she did, it worked.
You did something freaky.
I don't know, watch me a good pimple popping video while you people are being ass wipes.
Now, Thaw, we said he'd gone after this girl for years, and she wanted financial stability, so she finally said, I'll be your wife. They were married on April 4, 1905, Timmy.
1905, Brandy.
Thaw himself chose the wedding dress, eschewing the traditional white gown because his bride was not as pure as he would like. He dressed her in a black traveling suit decorated with brown trim. This guy's a prick to begin with.
Where are you at, that, Brandy?
Why is she agreeing to marry him? What?
Money.
Oh, my God. It's not worth all that.
And he picks out her wedding dress.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Now, once they were married, he began to act even more peculiar.
I don't understand how that's even
possible. He would tie Evelyn up and beat her with a whip before every sexual encounter. Okay. Now, that's, I don't know what's so
that's
strange about
that. That's the eye of the beholder.
Beholder, yeah. While beating her, he would scream that she was spoiled by Sanford White.
Who spoiled you, Brandy?
Clearly Dave does.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Did he beat you before you got that phone? Did he?
Nope.
Was any of that?
Did you call him Daddy to get it?
Nope.
Buy me a phone, Daddy.
Nope.
Now, Daddy, I need a new phone, Daddy.
Nope, that's weird.
Harry continued his use of cocaine and heroin.
Yeah, it is. It is weird, Tim. It is weird.
I'm not judging.
But I'm judging you at this point.
This new bride felt trapped in an abusive marriage.
I bet she did.
Well, she was.
She's got that lovely. She's got that lovely black wedding dress.
Well, you know, but here's the thing.
And tied to the headpost.
I will say this: she can wear that dress probably on more than one occasion. So, it really was practical.
Good for funerals.
Exactly. Yeah.
So she felt like she was trapped in this abusive marriage, and she did not have the means to escape it. On June 25, 1906,
was she making any money?
No, I think when she got married, he wouldn't let her work.
Now, on June 25, 1906, it was an inordinately hot day.
Yes.
It was like a whorehouse on dollar day to me.
That's a
it was
hot
like
day.
When they give a Groupon to a whorehouse.
Yes, what do you think about that, Brandy?
I think Chuck knows a little much about Groupons at whorehouses.
Harry and Evelyn were stopping in New York briefly before boarding a luxury liner bound for a European holiday.
Motherfuckers go to Europe a lot.
Yeah, they do. Harry had purchased tickets for him and his wife to see a new Broadway show that was playing in the rooftop theater of Madison Square Garden. Now, in spite of the suffocating heat, which did not abate as night fell, Thaw inappropriately wore over his tuxedo a long black overcoat, which he refused to take off throughout the entire evening. At 11 p.m., as the stage show was coming to a close, Stanford White appeared, taking his place at the table that was customarily reserved for him.
Okay, so now, Brandy, picture it. Harry Thaw and his wife, Evelyn, are now in the same room
as Stanford White. All right.
Harry, who seemed agitated all evening, abruptly bounced back and forth from his own table throughout the performance. Spotting White's arrival, Timmy, he tentatively approached him several times, each time withdrawing in hesitation. During the finale, I Could Love a Million Girls.
That was Stanford White's favorite song.
I bet it was.
Harry produced a pistol. And standing some 2 feet from his target, fired 3 shots at Stanford White, killing him instantly.
Oh, your comments on that, Brandy?
Not very slick, is he?
Parts of White's blood-covered face was torn away, and the rest of his features were unrecognizable, blackened by gunpowder.
This is what happens when your children don't face consequences.
Now, Harry Thaw remained standing over White's fallen body, displaying the gun in air and resoundingly proclaiming, according to witness reports, I did it because he ruined my wife. He had it coming and he took advantage of the girl and then abandoned her.
Your comments, Brandy.
Idiot.
It seems like, though, this worked out for him because he got the girl.
Well, continue, Colonel.
The crowd initially suspected it might be part of the show and elaborate practical jokes were popular in high society at the time.
Well, I mean, you know, that was after the Lincoln assassination. If there's a shooting in the theater, don't assume it's part of the show.
Getting real now.
Yes. Head toward the nearest exit.
It became apparent that Stanford White was, in fact, dead. Harry still.
It became apparent because his face was gone?
Well, Harry was still brandishing the gun high above his head. He walked through the crowd and met Evelyn at the elevator. When she asked what he had done...
Come on, we got to go. We got to go now. Come on, let's go. We're leaving.
Grab your coat. Thaw purportedly replied, it's all right. I probably saved your life.
Yeah.
Harry was arrested and charged with the murder of Stanford White. He was denied bail and sent to Tombs Prison. While waiting trial, Harry was not treated like any other person. A newspaper at the time shows Harry Thaw in the Tombs Prison seated at a formal table setting, dining on a meal catered for him by Delmonico's restaurant. In the background is...
Don't do the crime if you can't do the time, Brandy.
It's further evidence of the preferential treatment of the Thaw influence, and his money provided to the incarcerated man. Conspicuously absent is the standard-issue jail cell cot. During his confinement, Thaw slept in a brass bed.
Of course he did.
Comment on that, Brandy.
Nope, motherfucker's never going to learn.
Exempted from wearing prisoner's garb, he was allowed to wear his own custom tailored clothes. And, you know, that prisoner's garb, as the devil can tell you, it's never flattering.
No, it's not flattering. Yeah.
The jail's doctor was induced to allow Thaw a daily ration of champagne and wine.
Oh, that's fair.
In his jail cell, in the days following his arrest, it was reported that Thaw had heard the heavenly voices of young girls calling to him, which he interpreted as a sign of divine approval. He was in a euphoric mood. Thaw was unshakable in his belief that the public would applaud the man who would rid the world of the menace of Stanford White, Timmy.
Yes. Your thoughts on that, Brandy?
He's crazy. I think we established that.
Thaw's family hired the best defense team money could buy. He had Kardashian.
No. But they did. They put up this like PR campaign portraying him as, you know, standing up for the virtue of womanhood. And
right.
Yeah, they paid newspapers to paint Harry Thaw as a victim who had defended his wife's honor. Mm-hmm. The Thaw family commissioned a book, songs, and a Broadway musical.
song.
All sympathetic to Harry Thaw. Harry Thaw was tried twice for the murder of Stanford White. They were dubbed the trial of the century, and that's bullshit because you can only have one trial of the century.
Well, this is 1906, so.
But you can only have one if he was tried twice.
Right. Well,
which trial is the trial of the century?
I think they just trials, I think they just put them together.
Due to unusual amount of publicity the case had received, it was ordered that the jury members be sequestered. Let me explain this to you, Devil. Sequestered means kept away from everybody else so as not to be
unduly influenced.
So, I'm sure you've been sequestered before. Now, this is the first time in the history of American jurisprudence. That such a restriction was ordered. Trial proceedings began on January 23, 1907, Timmy, and the jury went into deliberation on April 11. After 47 hours, the 12 jurors emerged deadlocked.
That means they couldn't reach a decision.
Yeah, deadlocked means they couldn't come. Yeah, for the devil, deadlocked means I can't get into my neighbor's storage unit. But but anyway, after 47 hours, it's a deadlock. Seven guilty, five deemed him not guilty. Thaw was outraged that the trial had not vindicated the murder. And the jurors had recognized it as the act of a chivalrous man defending innocent womanhood.
Well, he was kind of doing that, Brandy. That was his motivation.
Yeah, he wasn't crazy at all.
Yeah. Much like when the devil doesn't get her way, he went into fits of physical flailing and crying when he considered the real possibility that he would be labeled a madman and imprisoned in an
asylum. I do throw myself around.
You do your dollar flailing?
I will do that.
The second trial took place January 1908 through February 1, 1909. That's a long-ass trial right there.
Mm-hmm.
This time, Thaw was found not guilty for reason of insanity.
Not reason of insanity, Brandy.
He served 7 years in a mental institution for his murder of Stanford White, and he was released in early 1916. And he immediately filed for divorce from Evelyn.
Okay, so he goes to prison for 7 years for killing Stanford. No, he goes to, he's in a mental hospital for 7 years. Then he gets out, he files a divorce for Evelyn. Then what happens?
Well, soon after his release, Timmy, the rehabilitated Mr. Thaw was charged with the kidnapping, beating, and sexual assault.
So that worked out well.
Of 19-year-old Forrest Gump of Kansas City.
Forrest Gump. His last name is Gump, though.
Frederick Gump. I'm sorry, Timmy. This is Forrest's granddaddy. After assaulting the boy, Harry fled to Philadelphia with the police in pursuit. When apprehended, he was
found never catch me, coppers.
Suicide by slashing his throat.
Wait a minute. He committed suicide by slashing his own throat?
He tried.
Initially, he tried to bribe the Gump family. But the Gump family was not going for that. They said stupid is what stupid does. That's what they told him. He offered to pay them $500,000 if they would drop all criminal charges against him. But ultimately, Harry Thaw was arrested, jailed, and tried, found insane, and put back in the nut house. He was ultimately judged sane, though, and regained his freedom in 1924. After his second incarceration, he became a recluse and died alone in 1947 at the age of 76. Evelyn Nesbit went back into show business but seemed unable to recapture the success she had early in her career. Evelyn published two memoirs, A Story
two
of
memoirs,
My Life.
That's books, Brandy.
And Prodigal Days. During World War II, she lived in Los Angeles teaching ceramics and sculpting at the Grant Beach School of Arts and Crafts. She eventually moved back to the East Coast, where she lived quietly for several years. She died in a nursing home in Santa Monica, California on January 17, 1967, Timmy, at the age of 82. At the time of her death, Evelyn claimed that Stanford White was the only man she had ever loved.
All right, Brandy, your final thoughts on the love triangle of Evelyn Nesbit, Harry Thaw, and Stanford White.
Well, I think it was mainly a love triangle in Stanford's mind because she clearly had moved on.
Okay. No. Okay. So, do
she,
you?
No. She said.
Do you put any?
Do you even listen to the goddamn story? She said at the end.
Stanford yeah, but White she was had the only moved she on. She had moved on to somebody else.
Yeah,
like she was married to someone else. There
she
was
did
no
not
triangle.
Move on. It was the only man she ever loved.
But we're really, it was Harry's the one that couldn't let go of it. She moved on. She married.
Oh no, they were all crazy. Don't get me wrong.
But why would you say Stanford White was crazy? Just because he had a red velvet swing that he liked to swing young chorus girls in?
Well, in fairness, he may have been a rapist.
We don't know. Yeah, we don't
in fairness.
Know. We don't know that.
I'm not saying he's a rapist. I'm just saying
right. But, I mean,
there's a swing.
He obviously isn't around to defend himself. So we don't know. That was an allegation made by.
Well, I think that
we have no reason to not believe her.
To,
huh?
Well, no, that could have been something that she tried to mitigate a little bit.
With her husband.
With her husband, yeah. And who knows? I don't. Yeah. I mean, but clearly she had carnal relations with the man before.
It's clearly a very sad story. Wouldn't you agree, Brandy?
I think it's sad that girl's mom was so god awful.
Well, she's
trying to pawn her off on somebody.
So, are there any sympathetic figures in this story?
I don't think so.
you never think that in any, even in the stories where little puppy dies, you never think that there's.
Yeah. No, that's not true.
The hateful woman could read Oliver Twist and not find a sympathetic.
Old that's
Yeller.
Not true.
Oh, Yeller, yeah.
I love Old
fucking
Yeller.
Dog had to come and fucking with those raccoons. Fuck dog going out there for what the raccoons for.
All right, we would like to thank our Patreon supporters, those who support us so generously throughout the year. We are very, very grateful that you are supporting our podcast. If you would like to support our podcast, please check us out on Patreon. That's patreon.com/historydweebs, where you can give a little, you can give a lot, or
just a wee little bit to me. So we do want to say thank you to our Patreon sponsors. We got a new one this week, Terry Stafford.
Yes, thank you, Terry.
Terry, and that's Malachi. He was in Cincinnati here, Timmy.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice guy.
Very nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Alicia and Chip, Jen Moya, Tommy Lane. I'm sorry, Jason.
Aloha.
Jason Dykes, Jim Seabright. Aaron Fowler, Nene, Shelly Gerrart, it looks like here, Timmy.
Shelly Gerrart.
I'm assuming that's Shelly Gerrart.
Yes.
Bridget Clavey, Bridget.
Hey, Bridget.
Brandy McBride, Bridget Bernhardt, Jennifer Svoda, Maggie Glover, Marsha Boris, Stacy, also Christine Howard.
Schwad. Oh. I'm sorry.
Jody Wells,
Christine
Howell. Yeah. Daniel Sweet, Amber Sweet, Amber Anderson, Cheryl Weldon, our friends from They Walk Among Us, Roseanne and Ben, Laura Violet, Michael Dale. Daylight come now.
You know, I bet he's never heard that. Home.
Yeah. Kelly, he's telling me to wrap it up now.
Yeah, I know.
Kelly Sherritt, Karen Widener, Callie Jones, Mistress Vader, Ron, Joseph Kern, Lauren Meredith, Jessica Greeno, Mike from Pleasing Terrors, Sarah Bloom, Amber Krupp, our friends at the Now America History Podcast, Joe
Hopkins,
Rebecca Omelette, Cheryl, Catherine Cockrise Richardson, Fiona Crisp, Laura O'Reilly, Donna Curran, John, Sue Story, Christine Bourgeois, Maja, Anon, Kimberly Cameron, Elise, Diane from History Goes Bump, Amber Trevino, Annette Petre, Lise, Amber Scoville, Jahara, Jeff and Don Chestnut, of course, in their podcast. I just listened to the Reagan one. That was really good. Backroads of History, listen to the Reagan episodes. That's
yeah, the
really,
Reagan episode
really
is really
one.
Good. They got a new one out on the history of tuberculosis, the consumption.
The consumption.
Yeah, so check out Backroads of History with my friend Jeff and Don. Yeah, Markia
Smith, Jahara, I got her. Andrew Happ, Karen Barnes, Rachel Flynn, Holly Woodward, Squirrely Shirley, Strap.
Yes, hi,
Todd Long, Lydia Fisher, Tyrone, Phyllis Munson, Melissa Montoya, Brittany Aaron, Jennifer Siemens, and Cindy Liu, Kristen Heatherpool,
Marissa over at the Vanished podcast, Zachary Deloche. Canadian Crude Crime. I got Christy Lee. Mm-hmm. Christy Lee with the really pretty teeth. Charlie and Allie.
From the Insight podcast.
From Insight. Tracy Smith. Jess from Kiwi Crimes. And last but not least, do I need to say his name, Timmy?
Yes.
Rudy the Wonder Dog.
Rudy the Wonder Dog.
And who, of course.
Was Rudy upset of the last podcast about the insatiable Terrare and him eating puppies?
No.
I thought maybe he might withdraw his Patreon support after we did that. We talked about
Well, he was a little bit mad, but Rudy said I'll fuck him up. But Rudy was listening to the podcast. He turned to me and he said, damn, that guy eats more pussy than us. Because, you know, he liked the cats.
Yes.
He loved those cats. And he said, damn, that guy eats more pussy than Ellen.
It's terrible.
Rudy's not. He's crass to me.
He is. So, we would like to send a special get well wish
to Lady Beverly,
mm-hmm. lovely Lady Beverly, who's been feeling under the weather. So
and of course Dottie
and my mom. Yes, we hope everyone had a wonderful Thanksgiving, and we'll talk. We'll see you real soon. Next time on History Dweebs. Bye everyone.
Bye bye.
Good day.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.